Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Phantom Nation, an internet radio program named for the book of the same name that slices and dices the wretched big lie of the age. In every generation, there's one told about the Jews, and in this one, it's their armed robbery of Palestine from its rightful ancient owners, the historic Palestinians, mentioned in no book until the late 20th century. That is a major fact about today's so-called Palestinians, about whom there is nothing Palestinian. This fact ignited my voluminous investigation into the origin of this generation's whopping big lie about the Jews. Yos truly was hired almost 30 years ago by the office of Prime Minister of Israel, Yitzhak Shamir, to do a study of voting patterns at the UN. I did that and came up with some eye-popping facts. For example, the 55,642 individual country votes cast against Israel by the nations of the world during the UN's first half century, or the fact that in the same time period, the General Assembly condemned Israel, its most severe rebuke, 320 times, versus the zero times the Assembly condemned an Arab or PLO terrorist cult cell. But I also discovered the first resolution using the term the Palestinians, which did not come until 1970, a quarter century after the birth of the UN. In the 1950s and 60s, there was not one mention of any Palestinians in the UN, as that term is used today. And this was not Israel's fault. Between the League of Nations mandate to the UK in 1922 to create a Palestine that never existed in 14 centuries of Muslim rule, and the 1960s, the Arabs angrily insisted there was no such country as Palestine. Their mispronunciation of the name of the country known to Jews and Christians, but never to Muslims. Only in the 1960s did the Arabs reverse course 180 degrees and start insisting that there was not only a Palestine in history, but the Arabs were the original, ancient, authentic Palestinians. But if modern Israelis, to their shame, have never gone to war against this lie of a Palestinian nation with rights to a state in the Jewish people's homeland, and thus they have betrayed their pioneering Zionist forebears who shamelessly, even those on the left, declared Eretz Yisrael the Jewish people's ancient homeland. And only the Jewish people. In today's edition of Phantom Nation, we shall shine a light on the contrasting speeches delivered in Cairo by Barack Obama a decade ago, this Muslim Brotherhood agent, and last week's by Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Literally, those two are worlds apart, and we'll get started after a message from Israel News Talk Radio.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Shalom leYehudim, shalom leBnei Noach, shalom leGoyim. This is Phantom Nation, an internet radio program named for the book of the same name that slays the dragon breathing anti-Jew fire in words and expressions that are all lies. In this generation, the big lie is called Palestinian nationalism. It's an updated version of anti-Semitism. Today's fairy tale is of the villainous Jews who stole Palestine from the allegedly prehistoric Palestinians. And never mind that history left no trace of such a people ever living here. It's the second day, Ches B'Chodesh B'Shvat, Parashas B'Shalach, Tavshin Ayin Tes, 5779, the first day, Monday, 14 January 2019. Webcasting from the land, God said to Abraham, I will show you, 3,784 years ago. Last week there were several heartwarming news stories here. First, the speech by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo delivered at Cairo University last Thursday. The locale itself making quite a statement. But before getting to the substance of his remarks, one remembers Obama's speech in Cairo 10 years ago, sponsored significantly not by the government of Egypt. The government of Egypt did not invite him to address the Egyptian parliament. They knew who he was. But he was sponsored by Cairo University and Al-Azhar. That's the nursery. It's a seminary of for every major Muslim terrorist cult leader, Haji Amin al-Husseini, Osama bin Laden, Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, etc. Though, significantly, Obama spoke at Al-Azhar, despite the double sponsorship. This is the veteran Islamic seminary for bloodthirsty terrorists. The double sponsorship was thus camouflage that allowed the Obama White House website afterwards to post just Cairo University as the sponsor, without mentioning where the president spoke. He spoke at Al-Azhar, whose priests are spiritual inspirations for the Muslim Brotherhood. So that too many news sites last Thursday mistakenly reported that Obama spoke at Cairo University too, when he did not. That is where Secretary of State Pompeo did speak. A school founded in 1908 by Western Christians when the British ruled Egypt in order to compete with Al-Azhar. You see, in Christian Europe, universities evolved out of the medieval monasteries when they began teaching subjects other than religion, a process that Muslims never went through, even though Al-Azhar is as old as some of the universities in Europe. In 1908, Al-Azhar was still unchanged from its founding in the Middle Ages in the Crusader period, about the same time as the universities in Paris and England. So Barack Hussein, named for the second martyr victim of assassination in Islam, assassination deriving from the Arabic, it's not a coincidence, Obama used Cairo University as kind of camouflage, or veil. Veiling is very popular in Muslim countries, with a culture of taqiyya, dissembling, hiding and lying in public. Obama spoke at Al-Azhar, and from his first self-confident greeting in Arabic that elicited a thrill of applause among his audience of youthful Muslim fundamentalists, their priests in training, what their reaction communicated is, "We recognize you as a Muslim brother, too." We can see that, and you can see this on YouTube, I think, his speech and their reaction. Al-Azhar is the spiritual home of the Muslim Brotherhood, an organization of men in Egypt at war with Western civilization since the organization's founding in 1928 in Egypt. So in choosing Cairo U for his speech, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo made a statement that adumbrated his later formal verbal statement when he bluntly repudiated the views of the previous American administration. Without naming Obama by name, Pompeo said that in his speech in 2009, he denied the connection between jihad and terrorism, between the uniquely Islamic homicidal mania for terrorist horrors, the serial massacres of innocent people by some Muslim jackass braying Allahu Akbar, and the religion. Obama's speech at Al-Azhar a decade ago set the stage for his later behavior, 7 months later, after the massacre at Fort Hood in Texas, when now President Obama insisted that Islam had nothing to do with it. I think in his first year in office, he also ordered, at great expense, the shredding of all U.S. documents connecting Islam to terrorism in words, they had to be rewritten and without such language. This behavior of Obama's was right out of Orwell's nightmare novel 1984. Remember that its lead character, Winston Smith, works in the Ministry of Truth, destroying yesterday's news. Pompeo used words like misguided and wishful to describe Obama's views of the Middle East, which was surely just being polite because the truth is too painful to face. Obama's views were not misguided, they were not wishful, they were treasonous in his defense of America's enemies. When ISIS started chopping off the heads of Americans, Obama chastised Americans for forgetting that the Crusaders were just as bad. In effect, he played defense attorney for Islam to the American people instead of defending the American people from Islam. Secretary Pompeo also deliberately spoke the phrase that Obama never would, radical Islamist terrorism, which is a vast improvement, though even this expression contains touches of dimitude. That's this culture of bowing down to Muslims' demands, Islam's demands. We see this in the use of the words radical and Islamist. The latter word was invented by non-Muslim Western academics, like Daniel Pipes, in order to shield their field of scholarly study and expertise from a wholesale dismissal of Islam as a criminal enterprise. One doesn't get research grants from Arab governments for slandering Islam. The word Islamist is meant to suggest that they're different from the run-of-the-mill Muslims and they are not representative of the real Islam. Likewise, the companion word Islamism. Islamists are devotees of Islamism. This is more Orwellian verbal corruption. Islamism and Islamist are tendentious perversions of the truth. Islamism, in particular, is intellectually outrageous. Where do these non-Muslims in the West get the authority to see distinctions inside the Muslim religion and community that they themselves don't recognize? The terms Islamist and Islamism are not used by Muslims. Radical as well is another word like that that should not be used. And I'll explain why after some lovely Israeli music.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar? She's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Secretary of State Pompeo last Thursday at Cairo University was right to use the expression radical Islamist terrorism that Obama could never say because he supports the Muslims who do these terrible things. And as the words Islamist and Islamism are dishonest, so is the cliched use of the word radical. This too misconstrues the reality. Radical derives from the Latin word radix for root, when today's use of the term connotes the opposite, the extremist, the out there on the fringe, when in reality a radical Muslim is rooted in the true root of Islam. He's not an outlier, unrepresentative of Islam. He is a truthful representative of this religion and its culture. For sure, these radicals, violent Muslims, are numerically unrepresentative. Of course, most Muslims are not violent terrorists themselves, but the same, most Muslims do support them. And that is no less important than the insignificant number of Muslims who commit these atrocities, these satanic acts of horror, the massacres of innocents. Secretary Pompeo would be more accurate if instead of speaking of radical Islamist terrorism, he might just say Muslim barbarism. But for sure, overall, his speech was smashing. I mean, smashingly honest. And it could not have been more of a contrast to the speech given by Obama a decade ago. Without naming him, Pompeo referenced his telling you, this is his audience last week, that, quote, 9/11 led my country to abandon its ideals, particularly in the Middle East. He told you that the U.S. and the Muslim world needed a new beginning, and the results of these misjudgments have been dire. In falsely seeing ourselves a force for what ails the Middle East, we were timid about asserting ourselves when the times and our partners demanded it. The good news is the age of self-inflicted American shame is over, close quote. There could not be a greater contrast between these two men and their speeches. Barack Obama and Mike Pompeo, the former is a Muslim son of an African Muslim and a stepfather who likewise was an Indonesian Muslim, Islam being a culture hateful toward America for its support of Israel, versus Mike Pompeo, first in his class at West Point, ground zero of American patriotism and pride in the United States. He's the last guy to join the hate America crowd like Obama's friend Bill Ayers, the 1960s terrorist. Mike Pompeo, in his soul, is on the other side of the solar system from Obama and Ayers. His phrase, quote, the age of self-inflicted American shame is over, speaks volumes about himself, about Obama and his Weltanschauung, his worldview. Secretary Pompeo is currently on a swing in the region to a half dozen countries, allied, so to speak, with Israel and the U.S. against Iran. He also said the U.S. will continue to participate and is in for the duration, quote, until the last Iranian boot leaves Syria. And there you have it. A shameless belief in the goodness of America and a commitment to stand up to Iran and contain it. Iran of the Muslim mullahs, who are as demented in their mind about Jews as any German Nazi or Spanish priest, ordering up the burning of the Jew at the stake and, of course, confiscating all his wealth and property. This administration, unlike the previous one, that handed over $150 billion to the priests in Tehran, chanting death to America, the regime responsible for the killing of thousands of American soldiers received this money. The current Trump administration, by contrast, sees Iran for what it is, this generation's successor nation to Nazi Germany as a threat to world peace. And it's no coincidence that both Nazism and Islam, like Marxist communism, see in the Jews public enemy number one. All three, Nazism, communism, and Islam, are totalitarian ideologies, all three rooted in hatred of the Jews. Here in Israel, Iran was also a top story. And the interview done with outgoing IDF Chief of Staff Gadi Eisenkot that he gave to the New York Times columnist Brett Stevens, which exposed the face of this man who was a worthy general, worthy of his position. Impressive interview. The interview strengthened my faith in the IDF and its ability to defend us from the Muslims who surround us on three sides and want to destroy us. Eisenkot said that Israel has dropped thousands of bombs on many targets in Syria in thousands of airstrikes, but claimed no responsibility or credit for them. Of course not. These operations are necessary, independent of publicizing them. Israel decided early on, under Prime Minister Netanyahu, to draw a red line at the Syria-Iraq border and said Israel would not permit Iran to expand into Syria. And Israel has followed through by destroying many Iranian installations and equipment in Syria. He said that at first Israel targeted Iranian military shipments intended for Hezbollah in Lebanon. Starting 2 years ago, the Security Cabinet authorized him to go beyond that, since Iran was also inserting into Syria thousands of Shiite mercenaries from Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan. By 2016, over 20,000 of these foreign Shiites were in Syria. The Iranians also built their own air base facilities at every Syrian air base. But, of course, not a word in the enlightened MSM about this blatant imperial expansion of Iran into and occupying Syria. The Iranians, under the leadership of Qassem Soleimani, tried to establish a presence as well on the Golan, but Israel prevented that. Eisenkot told Stevens that last May, Soleimani tried to hit back against all these Israeli airstrikes by firing 30 missiles at Israel, not one of which reached its target. Eisenkot said, quote, Soleimani's error was choosing a playground where he is relatively weak. We have complete intelligence superiority in this area. We enjoy complete aerial superiority. We have strong deterrence, and we have the justification to act, close quote. Well put, well said, well conceived. He went on to confirm some vague reports of a few weeks ago that I saw that Iran was, as a result of Israeli strikes, withdrawing troops from Syria and redeploying in Iraq, a country 80% of which is Shiite. The Iranians want to Shiiteize Syria, but we're not going to let them do that. Then, coincidentally, late Friday night, just before that interview was published, there was another raid in Syria, and the bombing of the Iranian area at Damascus Airport. An Iranian cargo 747 had just flown in and unloaded its war materiel when missiles came crashing down and exploded big time. In the interview, Eisenkot said that last year Israel had dropped 2,000 bombs on Syria, which may not sound like a lot when measured against the bombs dropped from airplanes on Germany during World War II, but all those were iron bombs, gravity bombs. These were delivered with a pinpoint accuracy never dreamed of during the war, that war, or in all of military history. You may remember as well, last November, a Russian plane was accidentally shot down by the incompetent Syrians, but to save face and placate certain factions back in Russia, the Russians blamed Israel and the relations soured, but since Friday night, the Russians have said nothing, suggesting that that period of ruffled feathers between the two countries is behind us. The Air Force also, over the past year, smashed Iran-built munitions factories in Lebanon, meant for upgrading its missile arsenal there. Israel evidently put a stop to that, too.
Shabbat shalom. In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
So it was heartwarming to read that interview with Gadi Eisenkot, Israel's first, I think, Moroccan chief of staff. His last name sounds Ashkenazic, but it's not. Heartwarming it was to think that our defenses are strong enough to protect us from our neighbors who surround us on three sides. We are some 6.5 million Jews here now. Our neighbors are 550 million, mostly Muslims whose religion is a form of anti-Semitism. And as for Mike Pompeo's Cairo speech, that was a real corker, as he toppled the entire worldview of Barack Obama, the Muslim Brotherhood agent, which he certainly was in the toppling of Mubarak and the rise to power of the Brotherhood in Egypt. Willy-nilly, Obama was a party to the rise of the Brotherhood there after decades of suppression by one Egyptian government after another. Versus President Donald Trump and his National Security Advisor John Bolton and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, they are the team that Trump should have had from day one of his presidency, and not wasted his time with Tillerson and McMaster. James Mattis, as well as Defense Secretary, was a wrong choice. He who managed just before he retired to stick it to Israel. The Israeli Air Force buys warplanes from the United States, meaning mostly the airframe, the wings, and the engines. But as for the, so to speak, intellectual guts of the aircraft, the avionics, Israel removes the manufacturer's equipment and installs its own, locally produced, which is superior. And in upgrading its current equipment now, Israel wants to sell off old F-16s to Croatia, containing Israel's improved avionics. But Mattis nixed the deal, which would have brought Israel $500,000. No one should be surprised, because Mattis exposed his hostility to Israel in the past, however mildly. So thank God for Mike Pompeo, who shamelessly, with a smile on his face, told his Egyptian audience in so many words, the age of Obama at the helm of the American ship of state sailing in Middle Eastern waters is no more. What a piece of work Obama was. His speech in Cairo 10 years ago, which I watched live at the time, made me queasy with unease about this villain of mere 5 months in office at the time. It was creepy to watch him declare a new beginning between the U.S. and Islam, for the reality is that the United States has never had any relationship with Islam, only relationships with other nation states, conducted by consuls and ambassadors and sometimes at war with them. The First Amendment to the Constitution declares no religion as the established official religion of the United States. In fact, in 1799, when the U.S. signed a consular treaty with Tripoli, Libya, the text stipulated that since the U.S. was not officially a Christian state, the treaty said the U.S. was exempt from certain stipulations of the jihad. You know, when Muslims first set eyes on the Stars and Stripes after the revolution, they were puzzled because they had never seen a Western flag before without a cross on it. Yet here was Barack Obama imagining America had a policy toward Islam, when it never did. This was all in his head. He rightly sensed an animosity in the United States against his fellow Muslims after 9/11 and other atrocities that this Middle East community has committed, when the United States never had a relationship with other than the consular and diplomatic ties with individual nation states, whose official relationship as Muslim states played no part in the relationship. Obama the Muslim, in his head, experienced a conflict that he wanted to repair by getting the U.S. to be more in tune with Islam and disassociate terrorism from the religion of his boyhood in Indonesia, which foreign policy was also inseparable from his immigration policy. One estimate is that 1 million Muslims were given green cards by this man during his time in office. He said in his 2008 campaign he was going to fundamentally change the country. And in his inaugural address, he envisioned Islam becoming the second most important religious community in America, displacing the Jews, as surely as Islam displaced the Jews on our holiest site, the Temple Mount. I suspect that the emotional fuel that drove Obama in 2009 to speak at Al-Azhar was his assumption that 9/11 generated much hostility among Americans toward Islam that he wanted to overcome. And it's no accident that Secretary of State Pompeo, in his speech, alighted on 9/11 in his remarks about Obama. It's a fair bet that he read over, Pompeo did, the transcript of Obama's speech, for his was a frontal attack meant to demolish Obama's worldview. It was the same distress in Obama's speech that he exposed after the Fort Hood massacre when he told his fellow Americans not to connect the slaughter to Islam. And never mind that the Muslim assassin was shouting out the usual Allahu Akbar as he gunned down his fellow U.S. Army soldiers. Obama's reaction to Fort Hood was an exercise by him in the public square of the denial that is so common among Muslims. For them, if you don't like the truth, when it comes to your own guilt, you just deny it. It was the same emotion driving his directive to destroy all U.S. documents making the connection between his religion, Islam, and the satanic violence it leads to. The truth and justice of the Zionist movement is another thing Muslims cannot deal with. For the better part of 14 centuries, Muslims ruled over the land of Israel, a.k.a. the promised land promised in the Bible by the creator of all that is to the Jewish people, and in that time, the Muslims did nothing with it. Photography was invented a generation before the birth of the modern Zionist movement, and photos taken in the mid-19th century are proof of that. This land was a barren wasteland. In 1857, American novelist Herman Melville paid a visit and called it a caked, depopulated hell. There was no Palestinian people here at that time. Never in history was there such a people. So what the Jewish people did here over the last 150 years was bring it back to life. At the turn of the 20th century, New York, Paris, and London were all cities of 2 and 3 million people each. Jerusalem had 60,000 souls. Today, there are almost 1 million. And it's Israel's biggest city. And there's only one nation, one people responsible for that growth, the Jews. No Palestinian ever built the public toilet here, let alone installed a stoplight, built a sewer. There never were any Palestinians here, and we Jews stole nothing. Okay, that's it for today. And if you appreciate this podcast, one way to say thanks is to buy my Fantomation, which some have said must be read by every Jewish university student in the English-speaking countries that will immunize him and her from the poison of Palestinian nationalism in our time that took the place of anti-Semitism, that took the place of the deicide charge. The book's available online at geffenpublishing.com, also on amazon.com in hardcover or a Kindle ebook. This week's music was provided by Daniel Ahaviel and Yossi Asolai. The theme music by Chilik Frank and Carmina Orn. As always, we conclude with Yosef Karduner. Until next time, I'm Shai Bentekoa. כבר אני עולה מדרגה ומודה על כל החסדים שהשם עושה עמי אוי ברוך שנתן לי נקודה טובה
שהוא מגלה את אותה נקודה מיד כבר אני עולה מדרגה ומודה על כל החסדים שהשם עושה עמי אוי ברוך שנתן לי נקודה טובה יש לי, יש לי נקודות טובות יש לי, יש לי נקודות יקרות ואף על פי שהם עכשיו נסתרות אבל באמת הם מאוד מהירות ברוך השם ש... לא עשה אני גוי אוי 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 הוא מזכני בכל יום להניח תפילים להתפלל בכל יום שלוש תפילות וגם להגיד כמה פרקי תהילים ועוד מזכני לשמור את השבת לכבד את הימים טובים ועוד מזכני ללמוד תורה ולהתקרב לצדיקים אמיתיים כשאני מחפש ומגלה את אותן נקודות מיד כבר אני עולה במעלות להודות על כל החסדים שאתה עושה עמי אוי ברוך שנתן לי נקודות טובות
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Carr from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.